Blog Talk Radio.
Shall be no more. You have the man that takes you inside what goes on in the world of sports. He's in the dugout. He's in the clubhouse. He's right by the water cooler. He is everywhere you need him to be to let you know what's going on. And also, you listen to the movers and shakers in the world of sports. You are found the right place with the legendary Doc Stanley on Sports
and Death. And if I may say that the Sports In-Depth Nation is here. The Sports In-Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, good Doc.
With the strands of Summer Madness, and so apropos it seems, whenever we play this opening theme song, and that's whether we're in the midst of a hot, hot summer or a cold, cold winter. Well, I'm calling you in the midst of winter from sunny Fortaleza or San Paulo. So apropos. The greatest piece of instrumental music Cool and the Gang ever put together, one of the greatest pieces put together by anyone. It started as a band, too, which jazz has a beauty with the name. And it's a Sunday, all praise and honor to Father God, first and foremost, the First Lady of the Chief, the legendary. So, Anthony, now we're talking about a book. So, Gang, we're going to talk a flow about her book, about some other books. Mets will play the Capitals tonight in the big game, third game of the big game. And then Yankees play a huge game today, 5-2. Didn't get swept by Buck Showalter and the Orioles, and stayed in the wild card race. They've been set out the first 2 days. The Williams sisters are moving right along, and Venus is saying that she's starting to feel better, and now, this ain't her swan song. I remember in the early part of her career, there was so much talk about they weren't committed. They had too many little things to do, and I caught the photo of the picture of Dr. J's sneakers for a host of reasons. One is Julius once said that you don't put all your eggs in one basket. And now they're calling Shakira the greatest player of all time. Her and Venus, the greatest female double team. Roger Federer didn't make it this time. He's injured. Says he will be back. Sometimes that doesn't happen in tennis. Tennis, football, certain sports, you just can't take that kind of time off. The injuries seem to be there, nagging them somewhat. Don King called him the other day. He said he has DeVern fighting for the title as vacated by Dante Wilder. DK turned 85 last month. Wow. Only in America. I love America. Wow. Don King. One of the same things, Colin Kaepernick seems to have a little company now. There's a lot of people not seeing it from that man. We'll talk some more about that too. And a host of other things. And tonight, it's a break. It's kind of silent. You know, you've got a great job, and nobody's talking about the great job he's done. He got the job only because it was turned down by his wife manager, Kennedy. He's not manager of the year, only African American manager to do that. He's been a great manager of all time. Doing another great job. And in the life. What do you say, Don? Only in America. First lady of the Jeep, the girls. The novel, one of them. But we should be here. But who's there? From Brownsville, with the judge. Five world heavyweight champions. Only in America. No, you can't only in Brownsville. And it's also, they open up with a prayer, some of the rest of the things. Not from here, as we are moving toward the end. Baseball season, football season. Lots of teams that always land on the street. Here are the Cowboys. Left the Jets. Wow. One of them silly. Get out of Denver. And now with the Cowboys. How about these Cowboys? That a lot of people really are kind of sad that they didn't snatch RG3. Imagine him down in Dallas now. Or up there in Denver. And then again, Black has always missed a lot of things in there. Not too many things like that. Geno Smith. Number two, finalized, he's going to be the backup quarterback, number two quarterback. Got that materialized. Maybe that's why we didn't get RG3 here. Send out two of them. Wow. Man, Bridgewater, what a terrible incident. Nobody hit him, nothing, just in fact. Out for the rest of the year, who knows how bad the injury will be. Tom Brady hit a lot of the first half against the Giants, it's even. The people look at a 2-2 this past Thursday. And definitely being felt to 1-3. But it's just a preseason. Both teams don't look that good. Jets have a brutal schedule. But Patrick Farrar says you played in one game at a time. That's how we'll do that. All right. It's time to stop talking, stop walking. Take your hats off, close your eyes. Let's take a minute or two and pay homage to the one. And only to God, it's time to pray. Take a moment or two here, pay homage, and just thank the good Lord for another day. Wow. Fortunate Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network, John Coltrane, discovered by Miles Dewey Davis. Dear Lord, here we go. Lord, we thank you for another day. More importantly, have your will, have your way. Lord, we thank you for little things we so largely take for granted. This morning, getting up, last night, laying down, clothes on our back, shoes on our feet, food on our table, clothes in our right mind, the mother says. So thank you, Lord, as much as we did for not coming down off the cross. Lord, we can't say enough, we can't pray enough. When we take this small, minute time to humbly get on our knees, Lord, we don't stop paying homage. As we no longer vocally step up, and inside we still continue to. Thank you, Lord, for another day. We know not what tomorrow brings, but we know who brings it. We ask these blessings, all the blessings, in the darling Son. We want to open up a little theme here. I'm not going to listen to you, though, everybody here. They know that. From Puerto Rico, don't you? Rosie, thank her. And congratulations to her cousin. She had a wedding yesterday. That's in our photo catalog. Let's go to the catalog real quickly. And we also got a picture of my afiata, the godfather of my brother Tash's niece. There's a picture of Tash here. Most Ali. Pick that name for her. It's a dude name. The boy, you can say, Most Ali. And it's the girl that's Most Ali. It's, I was asked to pick the name, and I put together the name of Moses and Muhammad Ali. Moses, the only prophet God talked to face to face. Lord knows how great and important Muhammad Ali was to us. You know, we talked about Ali all of his life. We will remember him all of ours. We salute Brazil, the only team now in football to win a World Cup and a gold medal. And they have the greatest player to ever play the game in Pelé. And I think Neymar is slowly but surely coming around to maybe be the best in the world. When he's playing with Barcelona. So, Teodoro, Cassia, told you thanks so much. I'm glad that you're your cousin, that they would say in Portuguese. Larry Beans. Larry Hardesty, one more time, will bring us in. Larry just became a grandfather about a month ago now. So we salute Larry Hardesty one more time. Larry will bring us on to Sports in Depth. Mr. Hardesty, greatest African American sportscast in the history. New York City Radio, the sports spot at WBLS, stereo in black.
Hi, I'm Larry Hardesty from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. You're listening to Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. Before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. You have the man that takes you inside what goes on in the world of sports. He's in the dugout. He's in the clubhouse. He's right by the water cooler. He is everywhere you need him to be to let you know what's going on. And also, you listen to the movers and shakers in the world of sports. You are found the right place with the legendary Doc Stanley on Sports in Depth.
And if I may say that the Sports In-Depth Nation is here. The Sports In-Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Truck In God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away,
you know, you get you're humbled and touched with our intros. You know, Mel Smith Jr. was part of our panel. He's the one who coined the Sports In-Depth Nation at the memorial tribute to Mel as he passed on. First Lady of the G. Hello, congratulations. Well, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me, Mel. How are you this evening?
We're good. Panel, this is the incomparable, the First Lady of the G. The legend that lives, Flo Anthony, she's with us. We got the Hoopster here with us. We got Eddie Cotton, I believe, joined us. Muscles should be here. And
I'm actually here.
We're going. Yeah, I heard Muscles. I see you, baby. Muscles been away. Flo, let's talk about the book. Let's talk about it. So where did it all start with you? Begin.
I'm sorry, Mel. I didn't hear you. Could you repeat that?
Yeah, I said, where did it all start from you? Where are you from originally? How did you get into business? The beginning of the legendary Flo Anthony. Where did it all begin at?
Well, I was born in Lorman, Mississippi. I grew up in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I came to New York City after graduating from Howard University. So that's how it all started.
Howard University. And you know, you've always had a hand in sports. I mean, boxing has always been a big part of your career and life too, there, Flo.
Yes, it has. Yeah, and I'm kind of back into boxing now because I'm working with my friend Michael Spinks. You know, I started out working with Sal Mambi actually, and Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, and from there I started working with Butch Lewis and Michael, and then after 30 years here later. I'm working with Michael once again, and we're really having a good time and getting a lot of appearances in. In fact, tonight he's flying to London for an appearance there, so it's really going well.
Eddie the Flame Gregory. I remember Eddie, he's one of the champions out of Brownsville, light heavyweight champion, Mark Whedon, welterweight champion, but Brownsville, I think, has produced more heavyweight champs than any place else. Riddick Bowe, Shannon Briggs, Mike Tyson, Tim Witherspoon, and the first one was Floyd Patterson. And, you know, Michael was the first ever light heavyweight, Flo, to win heavyweight championship of the world.
Well, he is still the sole reigning light heavyweight champion to win the heavyweight championship. And this
right.
is actually the 35th anniversary of him beating Eddie Mustafa Muhammad to become the light heavyweight champion of the world. And, of course, it's the 40th anniversary of his Olympic gold medal.
Wow.
Wow! Yeah, you know that A lot of people talk about that team. Mark Winkler, his team was great, but, you know, you're talking about him and Leon, and both of them became heavyweight champions of the world. Howard Davis Jr.
They are the first brothers ever to both be heavyweight champions. It wasn't broken to many, many years later by the Klitschko brothers. You know,
Klitschko brothers only joined, but if you add in the fact that Michael is only light heavyweight to win the title and then to ascend, and a lot of that was said too, Flo, that in his career he still made it to help and propel and push his big brother Leon into heavyweight picture.
Yeah, at first he wasn't even going to turn pro. He was just helping Leon, and then Butch Lewis convinced him to turn pro. Yeah.
That was a very unique relationship. You know, Michael Spinks, gang, we look at it, he is the only other guy I can think of with the exception of Marvin Hagler, who never, ever, well, he never came back. You know, him and Butch decided that, hey, man, this is it. And Michael is one of the few guys, Flo, the first lady of G, Flo Anthony's with us. She's going to talk about her new book and her other books. What is that? But he is one of only, I can think of him and Marvin Hagler, the only two guys who walked away from the sport and never came back, Flo.
Well, I think that Mike wanted to come back. I think I even think the retirement was Butch's decision, and I've always thought it was very premature. Just because somebody loses one fight, you don't throw them out the game. So I that's my own feeling about that, and I've felt that since 1988. But, you know, it's neither here nor there. You know, Mike has always carried himself with such great class and dignity. And, you know, he's considered, you know, one of the four greatest heavyweight champions, great light heavyweight champions of the world, and perhaps the greatest light heavyweight champion of the world, even though he feels that Archie Moore, you know, was the greatest light heavyweight champion. But when you look at the record books, you know, some say he is, and then some say there were four of them. So what can you say?
No, it's remarkable. Slim, you know, he was such a credible, you know, when you talk about Slim, you talk about clash. I remember a situation, Sports Net Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. The Hoops is here.
Hello. Hello, Ms. Flo. How you doing there?
Hey, how are you tonight? Nice to talk with you.
And also, I also got a picture with Leon. I took a picture with Michael Spinks at the Red Parrot. I was looking at it right now.
Oh, years ago, right? Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, he loves his cowboy hats, too. How come he likes to wear cowboy hats?
Yeah, he does. He loves cowboy hats, yeah.
Yeah, I got a picture with him with the cowboy hat.
Now he's stuck on a St. Louis Cardinal hat, but he likes hats in general.
Yeah, I know he's a big cowboy hat. He likes cowboy hats.
I gotta say, I had a little hatred for Michael Spinks when he beat Larry Holmes, because Larry Holmes was my favorite heavyweight at the time. So
he beat him twice, though.
You know, so. I didn't think
the
he won the second time.
The first match and the rematch.
First, he definitely won the first one.
He won
it definitely.
Yeah.
You know, I remember that first fight because Grambling was playing at Yankee Stadium back in the day when they still played at old Yankee Stadium, and they honored Dr. J. And I remember Julius was leaving, and he said, hey, Mel, you know, you need a ride? And I remember riding downtown to a friend of mine's house to watch the fight on HBO. And I just remember that whole thing, riding with Julius down in the limo. And that night, Michael Spinks becoming the first ever light heavyweight champion to win the heavyweight championship of the world against one of the great heavyweights of all time, Larry Holmes. Now, who are the other two guys considered as the greatest light heavyweights? Michael and Archie Moore?
I don't even remember their names because I really wasn't familiar with them. I just was working on a bio for Mike, and I was on the Internet and saw some of that, but I didn't even mention – I just mentioned what he said about Archie Moore. So, you know, I didn't
– you know offhand who the other two guys may be in your mind?
Hello?
I'm here.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Flo Anthony? This is D. Stevie Lois. I'm listening to your great dialogue. You hit a magic name when you said Mambi. Is that Saul Mambi?
Yes, Saul Mambi.
My God, he was my first
boxing client.
Well,
yeah.
I know Saul Mambi since he was 9 years of age.
Yeah, he was a former junior welterweight champion.
In the amateurs. And he became a 140-pound champion. But you mentioned also Michael Spinks. When he retired and didn't want to come back, but wasn't there a story there somewhere?
I didn't think that he didn't
want to
come back. I said that Butch Lewis retired him. Still am disputing that he, you know, because he always was teasing me if I get my old job back. And if I get my old job back, that.
But wasn't there a story there that Butch Lewis invested his money into a trust fund, and Michael is pretty well off because he took his money from the Michael Tyson fight and invested his money.
I would rather not comment on that.
It was written about. I just wanted to.
Go Google now and see. But I'd rather not comment on that.
Okay. All right. But when you said Mambi, I remembered Mambi was a little kid in my gym, and we used to train together.
When you mentioned Saul Bambi, I remember Saul. He won the championship. Don King got in the title fight, and they wanted Saul to testify against Don King, and he said he wouldn't do it. He said, "Hey, I'm not going to."
Absolutely.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know,
he would not do it.
Good to me, and I'm not going to. And Slim, I remember Michael Slim. He's always called. He loved the name, and I remember. I was at ringside at a fight in Vegas, and a guy came over with some Sports Illustrated covers for Mike to sign. And one of them, he had Mike being knocked down by Tyson in their fight. And I looked at the guy, and I looked at and Slim signed it.
There are pictures out there of him signing that. I only know that because we recently worked with somebody, you know, who has a memorabilia company in Las Vegas, and they asked me would he sign a picture, you know, knocked out with Tyson. I said, well, you ask him that. I'm not asking him that. And then they called me up and said there are some pictures on the Internet where he did sign that. So, you know, can I go ahead? And I said, I told you, you ask him. And then he told him, no problem, you can sign it, so.
I remember him turning to me after he signed the picture, because I'm looking, and he said, hey, man, he said, you have to sign them all. You want to crash the guy. Gentlemen, before we saturate her with boxing stuff, so, yeah, let's talk about the new book. Yeah. What's the title?
Thank you.
Oh, we're not going to ask about the new book, definitely. I love reading books.
Okay, and the name of my latest novel is One Last Deadly Play. My novels are actually Hollywood, Black Hollywood murder mysteries, but for this one I brought it on back home to New York and the Hamptons, even though there are scenes in Vegas, L.A., and Miami. And the main character, Valerie, is a gossip columnist. She's kind of me. And her partner his name is Rome Nyland. He's an NFL Hall of Famer turned private investigator. And it also involves a black jockey by the name of Vance Dumas. In fact, in this particular book, I have an entire black polo team playing in the Bridgehampton Polo Classic out in the Hamptons. Also, also it involves a retired baseball player by the name of Rael Jones. And so it kind of follows, I write all my books in a span of 7 days because that's a good formula for me. And flash ahead, this one flashes ahead to 2 weeks toward the end of it. But it follows all of these eclectic people for these 7 days. From L.A. to New York to the Hamptons, Miami, and Vegas, and they're trying to stop the bad guy whose name is Rolando Jimison, who's like a twin cousin to Royale Jones, from making one last deadly play. And there's another guy in there. His name is Sincere. Valerian Davidson is his real name, and he's the half-brother of this black.com billionaire Victor Dumas, who is the jockey Vance's father. I got great characters in there. I have a female jockey. Her name is Violet McLean. I have great characters in there. It's a fun read and it's a fun book.
Will we see this on the TV series or on the movies anytime?
I would like to, because of the fact that, you know, I had Deadly Stuff players. That really showed, that's when Valerie and Rome actually met Victor and Vance. They were trying to solve the murder of Vance's mother, Andrea Dumas. And that's how they came upon, at that time, they thought it was Royale Jones. But with this book, in the end of that book, they found out after he was fingerprinted and arrested for murder, his name was Rolando Jimison. And nobody knew what happened to the real Royale Jones. And in the beginning of One Last Deadly Play, a guy is on a deserted island. It's called Crooked Island. It actually exists in the Bahamas. It's like 60 miles off the coast of Miami or off of Florida. And it only has like maybe 100 or so residents. They don't have they don't have cable. They just got a TV set. It's like a fisherman's thing. And these fishermen have pulled this guy 5 years before that out of the water. and he has no type of memory. He's hooked up with this white supermodel that was coming to Crooked Island with an addiction coach to overcome her addiction. And once she comes back and she has a newspaper article, and it has a he says, "What are you reading?" And he said, she says, "Well, this guy looks like you. I thought maybe he might be related to you." And he looks down and he sees the photograph of Rolando. And then she says, "It's also about the black gossip columnist Valerie Rollins is somehow involved." And he, you know, all of a sudden he screams and hits the floor. So, you know, we bring back the real Royale, where in the last book, Deadly Stuff Players, Valerie kept saying that this Rolando. Well, I remember Royale being a little heavier and darker, the baseball player, and they you know, they make kind of fun of her. Well, maybe he got some skin bleach or something like that, but she never says how she really knew him. And in this book, it turns out they were college lovers. So it's really, it was a fun project to write, and you know, I really am very proud of it.
Okay.
Okay, well, yeah. How many books have you written, Rose Sloan? Because you said
this
the other
is actually
one
my third book. The first one was Keeping Secrets, Telling Lies, and it also had the characters of Rome and Valerie in it. They met in that particular one when, as a private investigator, he was trying to solve the murder of his cousin, an actress by the name of Jennifer Sands, who was a friend of Valerie's. And but I'm going to rework that book, and I've got a new title for it, The Saga of a Deadly Diva, just so that it matches
Deadly
the
Diva.
Rest of the Deadly series. Yeah.
Okay, well, gentlemen, she's here. You've got questions, go ask. The first lady is here. She's ready. Chloe Anthony.
Yes.
Come on, guys. Got any questions for
them? Yo, will we see you any book signings?
Yes, I have a book signing coming up September the 23rd at Sisters Uptown Bookstore here in Manhattan. I think that's Amsterdam and 155th Street. And then the following week, I don't have the exact day. I just had a meeting about it earlier today with a wonderful gentleman, Lisa Jackson, and the owner and chef of Boulevard Bistro on 122nd and Lenox. I'm going to have one there that week. And I also hope to be down at the Black Congressional Caucus in their book pavilion. That'll be the weekend before that, and this is going to be a special year because it's the president's last year, of course. And then in October the 8th, my sorority, Delta Sigma Theta, they're doing something like a books and brunch, so I'll be doing that. October the 29th, I'm doing a thing. It's called SITA, I guess, CETA. I'm doing something with them. And I have to, in October, I think, every week. I'd like to also be at the Circle of Sisters, but I'm not sure on that one yet. It's the 15th and the 16th.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've got a lot of book signings coming up because I found with Deadly Stuff Players, these books don't sell themselves, and you have to really get out and work it. So.
Right. You got to promote your
I'm going
to
do the same thing with One Last Deadly Play. And you can also get it on Amazon.com and Kindle, Nook, and iBooks.
Okay.
Yeah, make sure you email that information to me so we can run it here on the show.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions for Ms. Anthony Gang? Come out, she's here.
I can answer your sports questions if you need.
Who's your favorite NBA team?
Boy, you know what? I would have to say, you know, I hate the Knicks, so it's not them. I don't really like the Nets.
Oh, don't
so
say that on
the
show.
Right
got a lot of
now,
Knicks fans out
the
there.
Cleveland Browns. The Knicks did all my friends dirty. You know, all my friends that played professional basketball, the Knicks treated very badly. So I'm just not a Knicks fan. I would have to say, because I really like LeBron James, it'd be the Cleveland Browns.
Oh, the Cavaliers. Oh, they didn't
I mean, Cleveland
to
Cavaliers, I'm sorry. I got football on my brain. Cleveland Cavaliers, yeah.
Well, at least they got a black quarterback.
Yeah, I got a RG3, question.
At least they got a black quarterback and a black coach.
I love it so.
Right.
I got a question.
Uh-huh.
Corey, do you think that Michael Spinks maybe retired because he saw he had nothing else to accomplish once he got the heavyweight title?
I
and
can't
count. Michael?
You guys are going to have Mike on the show and ask him that.
Well, we got you, so you can't duck and weave, honey.
You can't duck and weave. He used to tease me and say, oh, when I get my old job back. So that kind of always made me think he wasn't ready at that time to retire. But you guys have to ask Mike that. He'll tell people he can speak for himself. I don't have to speak for him.
Well, okay. Because you know him, I thought maybe you would know. You know.
I know him very well. I've known him very well for 30 years, but I'm not answering that. We'll get him to come on the show.
You're going to plead the fifth on that one, right?
Yeah, I'm pleading the fifth.
Yeah, well, you know what? Well, she's okay. Right. You know what we'll do? Miss Anthony, she works with both.
I only work with Michael. I don't work with Leon. Leon's wife, Linda, handles all of his stuff.
Leon was in town before, but we'll get Miss Anthony.
And Michael were in town. That kind of came about because Brenda and Leon were going to be in. They were in here the previous weekend for something with Tony Orlando and Don at the Mohegan Sun, and then all both Michael and Leon had to do a signing in White Plains that Saturday. So they were going to, Leon and Michael were going to stay in New York all week. So a guy arranged the signing out in Queens, and I was able, they were very kind, and I was able to get Michael brought in for it. And then he just stayed here until then, too, because, you know, he had other things that kind of need to get done in the city. So that's how that came about. But I only represent Michael. I don't represent Leon.
So being a person that's been in boxing for a while, what's your take on the sport today? It seems like the guys are, you know, they're not as good. The sport is dying. I mean, what's your thought? Is boxing
dying? I mean, we
went
to the, Canelo Alvarez fight in Vegas, Mike and me. And we really didn't even know any of the fighters on the card. I mean, it's a whole different ball game out there now. You know, it really is.
Miss Anthony. Miss Anthony, do you see those again? Question here.
Mm-hmm.
Being that we're involved in sports and we're involved in problems of the world, what is your take on Colin Kaepernick leaning and not saluting the flag, and how he was lambasted by his own brothers?
Well, I think all
that.
Of them were crazy. First of all, he's a member of Kappa Alpha Psi, which is a African-American fraternity, so I don't even know what some of those guys were talking about. But I have always been, and Doc knows, is a revolutionary. And
right.
I went to Howard University in the 70s, and we didn't even play the national anthem. We only played the black national anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. So
right.
Then I was a revolutionary after that. And so in the 80s, this late 70s to the 80s, I did not stand up for the national anthem.
Right.
I have to be honest. I didn't do it. And then I went to Disney World, and Terry Anderson had just been released. He was a hostage, I believe, over in the Middle East back then.
Right.
So I went to Disney World, and so they were playing the national anthem, and my mother was with me. She was all ready just to be embarrassed, and then I stood up. So my mother goes, oh, my God, you're standing up. What is it, Mickey Mouse? I said, no, but nobody is paying attention to me being a revolutionary, so I might as well stand up. But I do commend, you know, Colin. You know, I'm always in trouble, but I do commend Colin Kaepernick for taking
Amen.
A stand for Black Lives Matter. People have to take stands. If anybody sees a brown-skinned man with an afro and they think he ain't black, they either colorblind or crazy. So I don't know what they were thinking. And then the other thing I wanted to also say is I think it's when the Super Bowl was in Arizona. We have the black sports writers, and we left the stadium when they played the national anthem and all wore black that day. So, I mean, you know, not that anybody noticed because they, you know, credential 5,000 people and it's probably 40 or 20 of us. But it just, we made a statement then. So statements have been made over and over. And as the NFL says, that they encourage players to stand, but it's not a requirement. So everybody needs to back off and leave the young brother alone. At least he's trying to do something.
Well, would you see that they turned around in retaliation and it made him the backup quarterback?
Well, that doesn't even matter because, you know, he'll get his job back. He was struggling with his job prior to all of this happening. I don't know if a lot of people do know that. He was struggling with
his
job.
He also donated. Also, a lot of people left out. He donated money also.
He donated his money.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Also, his jersey
no, I don't say nothing about
is
that.
The highest-selling San Francisco 49ers jersey. So some folks are somewhere are agreeing with him.
So, you know what?
That's why I like in my book, One Last Deadly Play. I just in my book, you know, my star lead character, Rome, is a NFL Hall of Famer. I've got a baseball player. I've got a jockey. I've got an all-black polo team because, you know, sports is really my forte. And I have a black female jockey also. So.
Okay.
GW, Mike, you got something here? GW is with us.
Hey, how are you guys?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
How are you?
How are you?
Pretty good.
So when you're going to be coming, you have a few books signed. I came in a little late. When are your
It's September the 23rd at Sisters Uptown Bookstore. I believe that's Amsterdam Avenue and 100 and like 50 something in here in Manhattan. Then the next week it's either going to be that Tuesday or Wednesday, 27th or 28th. I'll be at Boulevard Bistro on 122nd and Lenox. And then from in between, right before that, I hope to be in the Book Pavilion at the Black Caucus down in Washington. And then October the 8th, but I think it's just open to my sorority. My sorority, Delta Sigma Theta, they're having a literary brunch, and I'm going to be there. And I've got quite a few planned for October, but I'm trying to do them every week, different places, because these books do not sell themselves. And you can also get it on Amazon.com, One Last Deadly Play, and you can get it on Kindle, Nook, and iBooks.
Awesome.
Well, everybody here will be buying one. You know, ladies and gentlemen, there's an article, you know, Jackie Robinson did not stand for the national anthem. So, you know, we're going back to, and there's things that John Legend in a article the other day said, there's things in the national anthem that denotes racism and negativity toward African Americans. You know, it's really remarkable. It's really remarkable how we're always including things when it's at their benefit. You know, just, I mean, you allow the protest, you're allowed to do what you want, and, you know, that remarkable line that white people always, but anytime an African American or Latin takes a stand, it's always not the right time. It's just remarkable to me. You know, there are people burning Kaepernick's jersey. It's just,
Not burning it, but it's still it's the best-selling jersey on the 49ers jersey. So there are people standing behind it. I don't think they're buying it to burn it up.
Exactly.
Jackie
Robinson, 20 years after he retired, quote and unquote, he said he still had a hard time standing up for the national anthem, and because of the suffering of the folks. So
those guys went deeper
for millennials.
They went through all kinds of hell. I mean, the racism that was depicted on them was unbelievable. They were called names and stands and everything. So
spiked.
I stand with Colin because, as I said, I was a revolutionary and I didn't stand up for it for many years. So
you definitely wanted to put this one. You know, it's remarkable, and we talk about Jackie Robinson, and, you know, it's remarkable that you look like baseball offered Jackie Robinson no job after he retired from baseball. I mean,
no.
Jackie Robinson had no job. I mean, it's just, I remember when Bill White, and Bill White's a good friend of yours too, I remember when he was president of the National League, and he resigned, and I asked Bill White why. He said, because they're not going to change.
That's why I don't like the Knicks. I mean, the Knicks could give Patrick Ewing an assistant coaching job. You know, they could give him one. They could hire my friend Charles Oakley. They could do a lot. So I don't like them. They can stay over there looking stupid in the garden. So because they're not fair. They're just not fair.
Listen, throw in anybody and everybody in New York in sports entertainment. Prince, Michael Jackson, and the dad said about that. And I said this 2 weeks ago. You look at the Knicks, and you know they made Dave DeBuscher their general manager, and Dave DeBuscher did not come from the Knicks organization. They offered no job to Frazier, Monroe, Dean Memminger, Dick Barnett, and now you look at Phil Jackson, who was a super sub. And we're talking about a super sub in the negative term. And here he is, the president of the Knicks. And in the whole genre of the great black players.
And then he brings in his people from L.A. that they weren't all that either. And then they, you know, the Knicks don't win with them. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. It is.
You know what? I think we're mentioning, we're forgetting to mention that, you know, I believe that the death of Muhammad Ali has probably sparked some of these athletes to step forward, you know, since Muhammad Ali did that, you know, pretty much all his career. So,
yeah.
I would like to think that, but I don't know if I think they're that deep, these young kids out there, but I would like to think that.
Well, you know what's going to happen, though? There's going to be more of these athletes going to boycott this flag. There's going to be more.
Well, you know what?
I
don't think it has anything to do with the flag. It has everything to do with the national anthem.
Going to boycott that flag.
Yeah, because the one who wrote it was a slave owner. That's right.
A man wrote the national anthem. Francis Scott Key was a man.
He was a slave owner.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
the American slaves got with the British to fight against the Americans. That's really why it was, it was brought up. So they were just talking about, you know, what their conquer over those slaves that fought for the British.
Yeah,
I mean, who actually won?
But. Then you got to throw the great New York Yankees in the mix when they don't have a manager of color. They ran Elson Howard all over the place. They denied Willie Randolph, and they still haven't done anything. And you got color coach for Yankee fans. It's your boycott of the Suckers, man.
I remember, Dusty, Audrey Tabb was telling me, and I remember, I told you, sports and their blocks are greater than the trust in government network. Our special guest is an incomparable listener. I remember Chris Chambliss got fired as the batting coach of the world. I mean, how do you get fired as the batting coach of the world champions? How do you get fired as the batting coach of the world champions? And Audrey Chambliss said that was an orchestrated move that moved him and Willie Randolph out the way, so that if Bill Torrey somehow, they could not get the job by deduction. Now, it was, if you look at it, 2 years ago, Willie Randolph applied for a coaching job, and you know, they told Willie they were going in another direction. And it seems that, you know, when it comes to African American Latins, they're always going in another direction, which is far away. There's nobody of African American descent with any kind of, I mean, look at all the years that Reggie Jackson's been there. He comes as a special consultant. But you look across the board in baseball. Dusty Baker, 3-time manager of the year, only African manager to do that, and one of the few people in baseball to do that. Dusty, go ahead, no job. And he only took a job in D.C. because it was turned down by a white candidate. Otherwise, we'd have this remarkable number that is really frightening. Last year marked the 40th anniversary of Frank Lazzaro becoming the first black manager in baseball. And last year we had the exact same amount number of managers that we had 40 years ago. One. Wow. You know, sad and touching. There's nothing changed. One black manager 40 years later after we had the first and only black manager. So it's all the things changed. And, you know, we talk about New York just kind of hyphens the refusal and the rejection of African Americans in any venue. In any venue, you know? I mean, I think that nobody wanted art. Well, we look around here, we're in the 21st century. We have an African American president who's done 2 terms, and Yankees are not even remotely thinking about a black manager. Now, look at the Knicks. I mean, the Knicks, they brought in Isaiah Thomas. Then when they fired Isaiah, they brought 2 white guys in who did the same thing Isaiah did, and every time something went wrong, it was Isaiah's fault. So Isaiah was gone, but every time something went wrong, it was Isaiah's fault.
Well, black president wasn't going to change anything. I mean, we thought it did, or we thought it was, but it didn't change anything.
We're not talking about a black president. We're talking about opportunities not being offered. We're talking about we're in the 21st century.
Well, it's true, it was supposed to open opportunities when we had a black president. That's really why he was a symbolism of that. But he actually didn't do anything to show that, to really open doors. What doors did the president open for African Americans?
With that, guys, you know, I'm going to hop up because I don't want to get in this conversation.
You know?
But anyway, thanks for having me because I got to run to do something else. But thanks so much for having me. And remember,
One more time. Give those book signings when they're going to be again.
Okay. Well, the name of the book is One Last Deadly Play. And as I said, you can get it on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and then you can also get it iBooks, Kindle, and Nook. And a book signing is going to be September the 23rd from 6 o'clock on up at Sisters Uptown Bookstore on 150-something in Amsterdam. And then the following week, it's either going to be that Tuesday or Wednesday at Boulevard Bistro in the evening also. I don't have the exact date yet. On 122nd and Leonard.
Taylor Cruz.
Right.
We'll have you back. Thanks for being
with
us.
I'd love to come back, and I'll get Mike to talk to you guys, too.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Have a great night, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Say good night, gang. First lady of media. Thank you for having us. You know, that we're definitely like, you know, Dusty, Michael, and GW Mike, we've got a big press conference on Tuesday. Another marquee fight. You know, we had Zimmerman and Porter, and we were just delighted to have two guys in their prime. A marquee fight. Now we got another good one. Kovalov and Andre Ward. Muscle, we're going to start with you. Mike Muscle, the thing I want to ask you, too, how big of an impact now is having mixed martial arts in Madison Square Garden? Is that going to be another detriment to boxing in your mindset?
I don't think one has to do with another. I mean, I know that they brought in that insurance policy to insure fighters up to $1 million, and that's been the issue.
Doc, I'm sorry to cut you guys off, but we got a special guest on the line.
Who's on the line?
Shalito, remember you guys asked for Shalito who fought Heather Hardy?
Hey, Shalito!
Oh, wow!
What's going
my
on,
God.
My man?
How you doing, right. Shalito?
I told you
I'm
guys I would deliver. Hey, hold on 1 second. I told you I
You know what? I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to tell you right now. And it's you know, Vince, it's been unanimous here. Okay. How
I
did
you
not
that was
you would be so I mean, that whole fight, you were the aggressor. The whole fight, landed more punches. And
exactly.
It was
hard to land the whole time.
I was stumbling up back everything.
Exactly. You had a back to the whole 10 rounds, man.
Yeah. I felt like it could have been like 6-4. I would have accepted a draw because it was, but no way that she beat me. And when they announced that, you guys could see that on her face, that she didn't even believe she was the winner.
But remember at the gym when you were training, you told me the only way I'll beat if they rob me, and you were absolutely right, I'm sorry to say.
Right.
And you told me they'll beat me, but they'll rob me. And because, man, you rocked and socked them. I mean, I know they're trying to build her up, but that's not the way to build her up.
Right. I mean, I threw way more punches on her, everything. But the numbers wasn't right. I mean, anybody that watched it all.
Yeah, but now, what are you going to do now? You're going to go to Europe and fight some people out there?
Somebody's mic is on.
I can't hear you.
Feedback.
Are you going to go to Europe and fight some people over there? Because it's hard for females to get fights in New York.
Yeah, well, I can still fight in Connecticut or Rhode Island because I'm not from New York. But and I have a huge fan base out here, so I don't really think that's going to affect me. But, I mean, going overseas, that's probably where I would have bigger money.
Right.
Hold on 1 second.
The kids are asking me something.
Oh, I see.
You know what,
guys?
After the fight, I saw.
What happened, you guys? I'm sorry, the kids were talking to me.
After the fight, I saw Lou DiBella came over and said something to you. What did he say? Because I mean, it was kind of obvious that you were upset. It was kind of obvious that you won the fight, but I'm saying, what could he say? But what did Lou say to you? Right after the fight.
He was like, great fight, great performance, girls, you know what I'm saying, everything. And then he said that there is going to be a rematch.
Oh, there is. But you said in Connecticut, right?
But the rematch is getting worked on as we speak. That's what I'm being told. So, I mean, you know, it's a permanent box if you get contracts. But, yeah, they're saying, and I think it's going
to
be this way.
I
mean, it's always right. Everybody's like, oh, she's the champ. She picks where it's at. Well, for one, New York isn't throwing anything anyway. So it's definitely not going to be there. And I went in her backyard knowing the consequences, and I went into hospital territory, and it's about time she feels the heat in this kitchen.
She felt your kitchen, that's for sure.
She already knows it went Toledo's way the first time. I'm still undefeated. I'm 18-1, but I'm still undefeated. She knows that. Anybody with eyes knows that. I mean, it was a great fight. It was better. She was better than from when I was calling her out. She has improved. But you know why she improved? Because she was training, getting ready for me.
Right.
She knew the fight was coming. She's been with DiBella the whole time. And DiBella, I love DiBella and everything he does for the women. I mean, without him, we would have never even got this opportunity, you know?
I want you to develop a punch, please. Because you hit And as long as the dude is still standing there, your decisions will go, probably go the next way. You got to start knocking out these suckers, man. And that's what I want you to do.
And the thing is, people think I have no power because of the knockout. You know,
right.
I got one knockout, but I do hit hard, and I think the heaven knows that. You guys can clearly see I hit hard. I was rocking her back.
Yeah, you were
on a heel.
Yeah.
And she didn't. I mean, she landed from shots, and it looked good. But and all they showed was her highlights. They didn't show anything of mine. And I landed way more than her. I would hit her with three shots. She would hit me with one, and they'd be like, "Oh, nice shot, Heather Hardy." And they'd be like, "The three I just hit her with."
Hey, Shelly. Shelly,
they showed me
Shelly,
no love. Uh huh.
Shelly, I could get you somebody to get you knockouts. You know, you know, Juan Manuel Marquez trainer, Memo Heredia, he'll get you to knock anybody out.
That's what I'm
doing. Hey, listen.
Wow. No, Chetty. I'll teach you to knock out. I got a bad left hook, man. I mean, I'm telling you, when I say bad, it's bad.
Yeah, hold on.
Hey,
broken.
Hey, panel, I got a question for you guys now that we have a problem in New York where we're not going to be able to have fights. I'm going to get a chance. You guys have got to see, because I've known Shelly since her first or second fight.
Wow.
You've got to see the fan base that this girl has.
Yeah, like, look.
Wow.
Well, we know that. We saw it on TV. They removed her name.
I just want to state the point that I sold just as many tickets as Heather in New York.
Wow.
Now, when the fight happens here, I'm going to sell the place out alone.
So. Now,
that's
you
real, because I have people. People don't just follow me from Massachusetts, Connecticut. I have people fly in for that fight, and
wow.
I have people from all around the world that follow me. Like, I'm not just. I mean, I'm not like a huge superstar, but
I'm actually
going to follow me
I'm
everywhere, not just in New
England. Tonight.
Up and coming. It's going to be up and coming. Believe that.
No.
So, well, like I said, you clearly have a decision that was looked upon by the New York press. We're the capital of the world in press. Right? It's a hometown girl, and we know
mm-hmm.
that she got beat. Can you only imagine now it's going to be only fair that the tides are turned if the fight should happen in Rhode Island?
Absolutely.
And guess what? I'm going to have 8 weeks to get ready this time, not three. I'm going to have 8 weeks to get ready.
But the fight
oh, you,
happen.
You only, wait a second. You only train for 3 weeks, and you put on this kind of performance?
Wow, she's
in trouble. Yeah.
Listen. I had a planned trip to Bolivia for therapy because I had a rough childhood, and I'm finally trying to get the therapy that I can now that I can. I'm in a position to do that. So I had the therapy set up. We had everything set up to go to Bolivia. I had to cancel that because of the opportunity and who it was. So I had to cancel the trip and everything. So that kind of messed with my mind. There was a couple of things that was going on. But, you know, it was just I had to do it because the opportunity was good.
Why 3 weeks? Did she have an opponent fall out or something? I mean,
no, it was a last minute thing for both of us.
Oh, okay.
For a last minute thing,
said,
hey,
you
look like
you have this opportunity. We have this opportunity for you. Let's do it.
Were
you
training at
all?
Were you training at all?
Oh yeah, I just fought Christina. They told me as I stepped out of the ring from fighting Christina Ruiz, but I didn't really have a great training camp for that too. I was going through a lot of stuff. I'd rather not talk about it. I had my last three fights, as you can see, I fought a little bit different. I was going through a lot of emotional stuff.
Right.
And it affected my mental heavy and my physical being. Because you saw I wasn't the same fighter that I used to be. But then with the Heather fight, I came back to who I was. But I'm almost, this time I'll be completely 110 back to Shalito's way, the people's way.
Shalito's way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm telling you, next time she's getting stopped, because I'm not going to stop throwing punches at all until the bell stops ringing. And you guys see me with Trivolino, I can do that.
Right.
Yeah, you got to stay on top of her, too.
Mm-hmm.
You got to stay more on top of her.
I'm
going
to be all up
in
my
right.
ass like a tapeworm.
Shelly,
for a hell of a fight.
Shalito, when you
uh-huh.
had, now, after the fight, all right, now we didn't
uh-huh.
get a chance to talk too much the other night. But when you first saw the reaction of the
hey, that ref was winking on blowing kisses at my girl.
what was your reaction? Like, what did you feel the first time? Obviously, you know, it shows it as a first loss. What was going through your mind when you first got when she got the victory? Were you disappointed
after
or mad?
Yeah, no, listen, the minute the fight was over, my hand was raised. I thought I won. My whole corner was going crazy. Pete lifted me up. Everybody thought that I won. You know what I'm saying? So I felt good. I had my hand up. The minute when I heard the draw, I was like, all right, I figured this is what was going to happen. When they said 99-91, that's when
wow,
I knew.
Wow, yeah.
That
yeah,
if one person
watching.
Got it a draw, then you have me winning one round. And I know in my heart I did not. I won six of those rounds, definitely. So, you know, so, I mean, it was a disappointment. It was heartache because, you know, when you work so hard, and I worked hard to have the undefeated record, I sold a lot of tickets. I pushed myself beyond what I could to try to get a chance to get on TV and stuff, and then that was taken from me, like most things in my life,
right,
without me having, you know, I had a rough childhood, and I was like, damn, it brought me back to that, like, damn, another thing that was taken from me uncontrollably, and I have no control over this.
What do you do mentally? What do you do? Now, how do you prepare? Now, again, every fighter has their way of doing it. Like, take me a week after the fight now. What do you do to mentally prepare yourself to, you know, not, again, not getting so upset and not let it discourage you?
I've been through so much bad stuff in my life that's worse than them taking a fight from me. But all it did is made me want to whoop her ass more and train harder.
I'll take it.
In my heart, dude, I did it. I still can't take that as a loss. I still say I'm undefeated. I put 18-1, but I'm undefeated. In my heart, I know I didn't lose that fight.
Right.
It can't mess me up mentally because it's just people taking things from me again that I don't deserve to be taken from me. But you know what I'm saying? So I can't let myself get emotional and upset about that. Plus, my girl been there for me. Pete's been there for me. You know, I mean, everybody's reaching out for me.
What do you think you learned from this fight? I mean, what do you think you could do differently in the next fight?
I'm not going to give away what I'm going to do, but I mean, I just know I'm staying on top of her now.
I mean, I don't want to know your game plan. I just want to know certain things that you didn't do in the first fight that might have gotten you the decision.
I'm going to jab more, that's for sure.
And stay on top of her.
Quieter more.
Stay on top of her. You wouldn't want to fight.
That would definitely upset everything.
I mean,
well,
I want to see
a punch development.
My back never touched the rope. I had her on them rope.
Well, you know, Chelito, when the first count was made, what was your reaction? Just the first count when they said 114, I think it was. I mean, the guy called it a draw. What was your gut reaction in that one count?
Is that when they said the 95-95, I was like, all right, well, we know if it was close, they would either give me a draw or they would give her a split, you know? So I was like, all right, they're gonna do the draw, which I didn't feel that I deserved, but it was in New York, so I expected that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But when
then
they made the
91-90, 99-91, you guys see my face. I was like, man.
Everybody saw it. The whole world saw it. Yeah.
You
fought
a
great fight.
Was,
you should be ashamed.
It
was a good fight.
Yeah,
if they made it
like realistic, but that dude, like, I only won one round, like,
this is the bureaucracy. This is the bureaucracy that happens in boxing. And the thing is, what I'm going to be happy about now is I hope that now we'll see something in the making, because now, being that New York boxing is on, obviously where we're at, you can't have fights there right now for the time being. Well, not that you can't, but it's way too expensive. But my thing
is not
now,
too expensive. It's not too expensive because if MMA could pay for it, if the UFC could pay for it,
Bellator could pay for it.
Boxing could do it too, and they pay.
Of course,
they'll
be making more money.
The promoters make a lot of money. They could do it, man.
These guys aren't going to dip in their pockets. But going back to that in 1 second, my thing is, now that they're going to have fights in Connecticut and Rhode Island, where Lou is shipping most of his fights to now.
Right.
My question is, now will they look at Shelly as his new prize and give her the edge? So it seems like you have all the cards in your favor now. So
she could still be the Bella's first lady. I'll be the Bella's first knight.
Don't matter. As long as you get that paycheck, right? Don't matter, right?
Hey, doesn't matter.
Right. As long as you get that paycheck, don't matter who's first, right?
That's it.
But like I said, like Lou, and you know what? I want to take a minute out and say I don't. I'm not saying anything about New York Commission. I'm just saying something about that one judge.
Right.
You know, I'm not.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we know that.
Right. Definitely.
That one
judge.
Dr. the Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard. We've got the young lady who was robbed, and it's kind of evident when you heard a draw, you must have said, "Dag, I didn't know Stevie Wonder was one of the judges."
And then Ray Charles was there also.
And then when they gave the other score where you lost, you said, "My goodness, Jose Feliciano's also here too. You couldn't win."
Well, right.
But I mean, to start off, hold on, gang. Where did it all start for you? What got you into boxing? Who are some of the idols? You know, where did it all start for you to get
well,
you?
Well, I see Mike Tyson all, so.
Well,
with
me,
I got
into the boxing when I was getting abused and sexually abused, so I used it as a way to channel my hurt and anger. I had no intentions on trying
wow.
to have a career out of it. I used it to balance my mind and my mental and everything.
Wow.
So, you know, even to this day when I'm not boxing, I get depressed. Mock's in here with me right now, Kaylee Reese, and she'll tell you how depressed I get when I'm not working out. Like, it's, I get deep, dark depression. Now, my idols, I learned how to box pretty much. What I would do is I would put on YouTube and watch Vinny Paz and Mike Tyson, and I would just try to copy them when I sparred.
Well, Mike will be proud of you, that's for sure.
Thank you,
Rooney.
Definitely.
Gentlemen, real quick, Minnie Vinny, give me 2 seconds here. Sparky Nuts Live Talk Radio on the Structure Guard Radio Network. We had Flo Anthony join us earlier. The last deadly sin, her new book. We want to go through the photos on our collage. The top people, me and my crew there, Mel, Circle, Jiminy, and Chastity. We also have the Williams sisters, Venus and Serena. They're both advanced over at the years over. Rafael Nadal got knocked out tonight. And the woman's 8, number 2, Madison got knocked out. We got a picture of Dusty Baker, who I think right now definitely should be probably being the man of the year. My beloved Tasha. She's there with my goddaughter, most probably. And we happy birthday to Eric Tells Ford, who will be 70 on the 8th. Happy birthday to Little Mel on the 9th. And Independence Day for Brazil is on the 7th. It's also the birthday of the only disco artist ever won a Grammy, the legendary Gloria Gaynor. The second half was the birthday of the voice who brings us on and off, the incomparable Larry Hardison, and his son, Shamari. And we say happy birthday to two of the finest scribes in the history of New York City journalism, the incomparable legendary Bill Roden on the 2nd, and the man who really helped propel Tiger Woods into journalistic heaven, Cliff Brown. Happy birthday to both of them. Not a beans, as they would say in Portuguese, to Rosie. She had a wedding yesterday for a cousin. Geno Smith has cemented the backup role with the Jets. At one time it seemed that may not happen, and he will continue to stand with the man who won't stand, Kaepernick. He's got some assists, one of his teammates, another team, and you, Dusty told you earlier, we validated that Jackie Robinson didn't do it and had a problem standing, and Flo Anthony and her group didn't stand also. Don King gave me a call the other day. Stavern will be fighting the number one contender for the WBC Heavyweight Championship title as Deontay Wilder, who's also his fellow in here, while he recuperates. The winner of that fight will become the WBC champ, and they will have to fight Wilder, who will get a shot at, he has one part of the belt as it, so that's going to be happening there. We also told you about Rosie, and Roger Federer didn't make it to the U.S. Open. He had some injuries. He says he will be back, but sometimes when you pull out of tennis like that, and you pull out of football, we'll see. Injuries, he may say one thing, injuries may say another. The Last Deadly Play is the name of Flo Anthony's book. She told you what the book size is going to be. Just go on Amazon. Last Deadly Play, order a copy. And we'll eventually have Flo back with my thing. Get your books. I will make sure you get those for you. I'll be ordering mine. Fortunately, that blog site, Trust and Glory Network, Mets and the Capitals, scored at the end of 1.5. Yankees won a big game today, beating the Baltimore Orioles, who had beat them 2 games in a row. In fact, they had whitewashed them, shut them out. So they had a big win, kept them 3.5 at the wild card stage instead of going to 5.5. Sanchez, bright young catcher, won the Rookie of the Month and the Week. Fastest man ever in baseball history to get to 11 home runs, especially as a catcher. Remarkable. He wears number 24, which is the number of the greatest baseball player who ever lived. The one and only. Willie Mays. We want to prove Don King again last month. On the 20th, Don King had his 80th birthday. Wow. His 85th birthday. So with that, let's let Mel Smith Jr. bring us back in. We want to thank Mike, GW Mike, for Naz. Did Naz join us from Atlanta? Are you here, Naz? We want to thank Mike.
Yeah, I'm getting in here late. How y'all doing?
Okay,
how
Naz,
are doing?
We're going to mention Atlanta. Naz, I'm going to be in Atlanta next week. I'll give you a shot. Naz, we've been talking about a lot of things. We want to bring in real quickly your thoughts, your reflection on Kaepernick and his refusal to stand for the national anthem. Come on, tell it, baby. Get militant. We all have it ready.
I mean, as you guys just stated, I mean, the great Jackie Robinson felt the same way. And to be honest, Kaepernick just showed himself as a man and a man of integrity and principles who's willing to risk his career and his money on what matters to him, which would be what black people go through, the hell we're catching from the police. And to watch the media and most of middle America try to look for any excuse not to talk about the thing he's actually protesting. They bring up his socks, his T-shirt, how he did it, when he did it, the veterans, which they claim to care so much about, yet these veterans come home and don't get the health care, mental care, housing,
right,
or jobs that they actually need, makes me think that they don't really mean what they say. So shout out to the great Colin Kaepernick, man. He is proof.
Right.
He is proof that that black tradition is not gone, man. That black radical tradition is not gone.
And
plus, I said earlier, he donated money. Then other people that say about that, he donated money. They ain't saying nothing about that, but they look at the other things. You know what I mean?
What you're saying is he's putting his money where his mouth is. And just here's just a thought.
Exactly.
Here's just a thought. No, Joe Louis did 4 years in the military. Joe Louis donated whole purses to the United States government. I remember that was a story.
War bonds.
That, you know, that's you're right. And I remember there was a story. Joe had done a show with his wife, and the IRS was down in the ticket booth taking the money that he had. The United States government, okay, Joe Louis' mother had put together a little savings account for him, as mothers do. They took that. And what did they
do? They made sure to humiliate Joe Louis, even though they never went after the people who did the bookkeeping, the managing, and everything else for his money. Even though, like you said, he donated over the years, they still never went after any of them. They just went after Joe. So it's that same old story, man. And
now,
if I could, there's one point I forgot with Kaepernick. They keep bringing up that T-shirt. They keep saying, oh, well, he has a Fidel Castro T-shirt on. It's like, no, if you're from the black community, that's a Malcolm X T-shirt. That shirt documenting that picture from when Fidel first came in power, came to the U.S., and they treated him like hell in Manhattan. So he came to Harlem and stayed at the Teresa Hotel where he met the great Malcolm X in that monumental meeting, showing dignity to black people across the world on the world stage.
Because Waldorf will not take him.
Turn him away. I remember that.
Carl Mansfield told this story. For you to know, Carl Mansfield was the executive editor of the legendary Bigger Newspaper. He also was the personal photographer of Malcolm X. And you're right. Castro stayed up in Harlem, always came up to that church. And he said he was walking along, and Malcolm said, hey, Carl, come for a minute. And there was Castro. So he took a nice shot of Carl. Carl took a photo of Castro and Malcolm X. Carl said none of the daily white newspapers would take that photo. They would not. Here's another story for you. You know, and let's not get this twisted. Bill Vernon wrote a story about 2 years after Ali retired. And he ended the story saying, Ali's made millions, but some people have never made one. He's been heavyweight champion of the world 3 times, but some people have never been once. And I came into the press room. I've told this story before. Sports the Blog Talk Radio and a special guard, you know. And I said, Bill, that was a great story about Ali. He said, Mel, it took me 2 years to get that story in. I said, what do you mean? He said, Mel, it took me 2 years to get that when it wasn't your typical poor broke, down on his luck, tough luck, black fighter story. They didn't want to run. It was Ali. As long as and they can tell you, well, you know, Joe Louis is buried in Arlington National Cemetery. Yeah, so what? He don't know that. you know, it's sad and touchy. Sports in the Bronx are greater than the question government. Nas, we want to talk about football real quick before we get back to our special guest. You know, I'm looking at this thing as Bridgewater, and I'm thinking across the board, I'm thinking, you know, all these teams who didn't want to touch RG3, they're probably sad now. Minnesota, Dallas, the Jets, nobody wanted to touch RG3. Now he's in Cleveland. Your thoughts on that? I think he was kind of blackballed too a little bit there, Nas.
Yeah, I mean, Shanahan spread a lot of rumors within the NFL community about RG3, which hurt his chances at a few clubs. But, I mean, he's back on his feet. We'll see how he does. I mean, he's with Hugh Jackson, so he couldn't ask for a better guy to manage him as far as the QB. But
Shanahan destroyed him because he had him play injured.
Yeah.
He had him play injured throughout the playoffs. It would nothing. Shanahan's a piece of garbage who should be thrown out of the NFL. And the
well, then he spread rumors about him afterwards, though. That's just as bad.
Right.
You go and lie about the man afterwards and blame him for everything.
Yeah.
And Minnesota now, because they
were
scared. Yeah, but Minnesota, because they were scared to pull the trigger, now they end up paying out the nose in the first and the fourth for Sam Bradford because Teddy got hurt.
Yeah,
and now,
goodbye, Bradford.
That was sad. That's real sad.
Well, you know what, too?
They should have taken
out
G3.
You know, yeah, but Dusty, you know what, Dusty? You know what it was? You didn't want to bring RG3 here to New York. And in New York, people forget about the slave trade that they had down there in Wall Street. But you didn't want to have two black quarterbacks on the same team. And not,
that's
the big fact.
You know that? Well, that's stupid. You know that? Come on.
Yeah.
But that's the
first thing. Come on.
It's stupid.
Five, six
but
black
I give them this one out. The New York Jets know their fan base. And they know that their fan base wasn't fair to Geno, never really gave him a shot. They're treating Ryan Fitzpatrick as if he's some kind of Hall of Famer. It's really weird. It's really weird.
Yep. Fitzpatrick is a nothing bum, man. He's bound for six teams. Yeah, I mean, RG3 proved this as well.
Hey, y'all remember in the preseason, I told y'all Fitzpatrick would break your heart. And what did he do last game of the season? Go to the playoffs.
Yep,
winning
blew it away.
Go to the playoffs, he blew the game. I told you, that's what that guy is.
I told everybody that. I told everybody, I said, you look at Fitzpatrick. The guy has a losing record, okay? And then last year, the Jets won 10 games. They had 1,000-yard receivers, 1,000-yard rusher, and this guy had the best season of his career, and they still didn't make the playoffs. They still didn't make the playoffs. And here's the bottom line, Justin. Here's the bottom line, Nas. Here's the bottom line, Hooper. Listen, nobody else wanted Fitzpatrick. No, okay, when he went on the market, nobody else wanted him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Nobody
Even
else wanted
Bills
him.
Got rid of him.
Yeah. John Elway said, I'll put Trevor Siemian out there if I have to and wait on Paxton Lynch before I pay Brock Osweiler or Fitzpatrick. Like, John Elway's not about those games, man. He could have done it.
Cool. Yeah. Hey, here's the question, Nas, real quick. I think John Elway is every bit as great, or maybe even better, than Peyton Manning.
Yeah, I would second that. I'm an Elway guy when you put him up on that list. And I look at Peyton as one of the beneficiaries of the league changing the passing rules game. He's an all-time great, but when you start putting him in that rarefied air, you compare him to Elway, you know, Moon, Favre, all these guys, I'm not really that big on Peyton because in the playoffs, when the windows got tighter and the defenses got better, Peyton got worse.
Mm-hmm.
Nas, Brady, if New England, Sports of the Blocks, I've been a trusting guard, they're like, yeah, gang, they're here. You came in just in time. You missed Flo. She had to go, but Dusty's still here. Muscles is here. That's nothing. We miss you, baby. Stay close. If New England is anything but 1-3 or 0-4 without Brady, everything is a plus for New England. If they're 2-2, if they're 3, if they're 2-2 with Brady gone, anything but 1-3 and 0-4, New England is still in the catbird seat now.
I agree. They're going to be a problem when Brady gets back. That's going to rejuvenate the team. As long as Gronk is healthy, Brady is all-pro dangerous. If you take away Gronk, then maybe, you know, you'll see a little chinks in the armor. But as long as Gronk is there when Brady gets back, and like you said, they're not 0-4, they're a problem in the AFC.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the connection there, Gronk and Brady. I mean, my God, it couldn't be a better more dangerous team, a couple than Bonnie and Clyde of football. because these dudes are dangerous.
Dustin, let me tell you something. Last year, if that game against Denver and New England went to overtime, New England was going to win that game.
Absolutely. No doubt. No doubt they were going to win.
I agree.
New England was going to win that game. Sponsored at Blog Talk Radio, the Trusted Guard Radio Network. We have the Hoopster. We have Muscles. We have Jump Chest with the Choice. Muscles, let's come here. Kovalov and Andre Ward. How do you like that fight? How do you see it? It's a good fight in the sense, you know, that we've got another two outstanding fights in 1 year, and you're kind of thinking, wow, man, am I pinching myself? How do you see that? A lot of people saying, Muscles, that, you know, Ward with the distance was a guy that he should have took out. A lot of people feel that, he hasn't lost. He has the boxing ability to beat. Come on, just Muscles.
Yeah.
You first.
Oh, okay. Cisco?
And Ward, Muscles.
Well, you know, neither guy looked impressive in their last fight, of course. And, you know, it's hard to say. It's, you know, styles make fights. We don't, we you know, everybody's thinking that Kovalev is going to have, the advantage as far as being the bigger guy, being the harder puncher, and being a decent boxer. He's not a slouch. He is a world champion. So, being that they say, you know, Andre Ward has a big hill to climb. He's not a big puncher, we know that. He's a great boxer, yes, very good boxer. But he's going to deal with a guy who he's going to have a hard time nullifying because of all the things that I said, you know, the height, the reach, and the physical strength. So, but you know what? We have to give Andre Ward the benefit of the doubt to see how great he really is. I mean, if he nullifies him and outclasses Kovalev, you got to say this guy is one of the best fighters or the best fighter we have today after Floyd Mayweather.
Well, you know, it's I think, I mean, Cisco, you're absolutely right. It's to me, I call it a pick'em fight. I don't know which Kovalev is going to show up any more than Andre Ward. And the bigger question mark is on Andre Ward, because Kovalev has already proven that he is a monster of midway. Sure, he didn't have to look good, I guess, or Chembula, whatever the guy's name is.
Isaac Chembella. Chilemba.
Chilemba, right, you're right. I'm sorry, thanks. But Ward looked pretty bad on Alexander Brown, who was there to survive. And he didn't, and he showed a lot of timidity, gun shyness, and reluctance to throw punches and bunches in combinations. Does he need another tune-up, or this is it? Because now they had already signed up for the 19th as he was fighting Brand. So I'm saying, my God, what is the mindset of Andre Ward now? Is he being pushed into Kovalev? Does he really want it? Or does he say to himself, well, I'm ready for it? We don't know. Because of the fact that he has not looked too good, even though Kovalev is being criticized because he didn't score a knockout. Kovalev, you know, is an animal. He knows how to box. He knows how to defend himself. He could take a punch. He's been knocked down. He's gotten up. He takes no prisoners. So now, we're going to see them Tuesday. But from now on, you know, you got to say which Andre Ward is going to show up. Is that the 68-pound guy who cleaned up the 68ers? Or should he have gone into the 75-pound ranks after he beat Chad Dawson? Did he waste his time in the 68? We don't know. He's had 2 years off out of combat. So we don't know. And meantime, Kovalev has been fighting semi-steadily. So what's the, you know, the big question mark? I agree with Cisco. You know, we don't know who the hell is going to show up.
That's the difference. You know, you got a guy in Andre Ward who was inactive for a long time, and now
exactly.
They're trying to rush him into a title shot.
Exactly.
I think it's a little bit forceful because they kind of pushed him to go up weight.
Exactly.
I don't know if it was Andre Ward's decision or not, but being that it is May, you know, Alexander Brown had never been knocked out, so in
absolutely.
Andre Ward's defense. You know, we saw a guy who never been knocked out. But he fought a smaller guy in Alexander Brand, who gave him a little bit of fits as far as durability.
Exactly.
You know, would Kovalev have knocked him out? Probably. But then again, like I said, you know, styles make fights. You got to give a guy like Andre Ward that chance. I mean, Ray Leonard looked terrible on his comeback, you know, before he fought Habib. That's why he retired again, right? And he was dropped in that fight. So then he came back and he put the performance of a lifetime against some marvelous Marvin Hagler. So you got to give Andre Ward that ability, you know, that chance. I mean, I still give Kovalev the edge, though. He is the light heavyweight champion. He's the bigger guy. He's got the reach. He's got the height. He's got a momentum going for himself. So Andre Ward has a big wall to climb when they face each other.
Can I get one in on that? Because I definitely want to know this. In y'all opinion, can Ward hurt him enough to even keep him away from him?
That's the question.
I don't think
Ward,
so. The question we don't even
Andre
know
Ward,
till we get
Andre,
in the ring.
Andre Ward has been able to do that to certain guys.
Exactly.
But you know, he's done it at super middleweight. He hasn't done it at light heavyweight. And you're talking about a light heavyweight guy who could take a punch, who's pretty strong. You understand what I'm saying? This is not a weight drain Chad Dawson. You understand what I'm saying? This is a guy who could take a punch and who's going to keep coming. And plus, he has a good trainer, John David Jackson.
Exactly.
That's going to be, you know, they're going to do their homework, you know, for Andre Ward. So Andre Ward and his people have to do their homework, because this is going to be a hard stylistic matchup.
Oh, damn, man. You're scaring the hell out of me, man. Now I think dude's going to hunt him down. Damn.
No, you know, Andre Ward, one thing that Andre Ward has, he's very keen and he's smart in there. You know, you understand what I'm saying? So that helps him. You know, he's got good coordination, and he's got, you know, he knows how to close distance very well. So he's going to clinch. He's going to hold Kovalev. He's going to try to keep Kovalev from punching. But Kovalev is physically strong, and what he has to do is when he holds him in the inside, work. You know, let him go as much as possible and make the fight rough for Andre Ward. You know, those are two other, you know, stylistic problems that they're both going to have coming in. So.
Right. And if you look at Andre Ward, physically, he has bulked up. He looks big. He has more shoulders, more arms.
But he looks big, but he hasn't looked stronger.
That's the point. He looks big, but he hasn't looked stronger.
He hasn't looked stronger. I mean, he had that good fight against Sullivan Barrera, you know, where he scored the knockdown.
Right.
But, you know, and in that fight, he looked, you know, people were talking about how he got hit and how rusty he looked or whatever. I mean,
exactly.
Expected. The guy was away for a long time. But then again, he you know, he outclassed the guy who was undefeated. I mean, maybe he wasn't at his level, but he was undefeated.
And, it was a little kid,
you know,
young kid.
And like I said, you know, guys look bad sometimes before those big fights, and then the guy puts a performance of a lifetime. So give Andre Ward that opportunity. Like I said, I give Kovalev the edge, but I would not sleep on Ward. Ward was a sleeper in the super middleweight division before he came into that tournament. So, and look what he did. So you got to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. You're right, absolutely right. Well, Cisco, question. What do you think he would have – do you think he should have taken Stevenson first?
Andre Ward? Stevenson?
Yeah.
You mean
– Yeah, Superman.
Oh, that guy can't even get a fight with Kovalev. I mean, that fight – you know what I mean? So going after Stevenson, I mean, that could have been made, but they're both HBO guys. Stevenson is a Showtime guy, and he's a Al Heyman guy. So they're not this is the fight. You know, you keep it in house. You know, that's really why this fight was made. You understand? And plus, they're trying to get a superstar here. If Kovalev can win, he becomes a bigger superstar.
Yeah.
But the problem is that who really cares about this fight is the problem. You know, that's what we're looking at. I mean, this fight is supposedly going to be on pay per view. I'm not sure. I think it should be on HBO.
Pay-per-view.
I don't think both guys are superstars and are really sellable. But they're pushing this fight as the super fight for this year, and I don't see it. I really don't see it.
Sportsman Bet, Dry Talk Radio, and Christian Garvey Network out at the U.S. Open. Nadal is gone. He's been suffering for a while. Federer didn't make it at all. Number 8, Madison, number 8 seed woman, so she's gone. The Williams sisters are still there. Yankees won a big game today to keep their playoff hopes alive. And the Mets need a big win tonight against Dusty Baker, who I think is manager of the year against that Nationals. We want to thank Flo Anthony for being with us. We're talking boxing. We just talked about the Kovalov and Andre Ward fight. Gentlemen, nobody's talking about this fight with Alvarez. What's wrong here? Come on, somebody say that. Alvarez,
he's cursing out Doc. He's cursing out Triple G to keep himself alive. He says, you don't have to tell me. I'm going to dictate to people when I'm going to fight you, but I got you by radar. This is all Spanish papers, by the way. I got you in the radar, and after I get rid of Smith, you and I are going to talk, but you're not going to tell me when to fight you. I'll fight you when I want to fight you. So this is the turnaround thing because of the fact that how is he going to do that when supposedly he threw away his belts? I mean, the 60-pound belt, so I don't know whether he got him in storage or that was a big piece of crap, but that's what he told. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oscar just went on record and said that they wouldn't fight in the year 2017. So, they're stalling. They're stalling. They're trying to do. You know, I remember at a press conference, he said, "Oh, do you remember Floyd and Pacquiao? You see how they're trying to use the same formula."
Exactly.
But the problem is, this is doing nothing to hype the fight. This
exactly.
is actually killing it. And the fight game, you know, you see it all across the board. These fighters are saying, we're not ready to fight yet, or this fight shouldn't be made, or let's make this fight juicier. Man,
right.
Forget about it, man.
Right. Actually, you're absolutely right. And then this one next week with Triple G and Kell Brooks. I mean, my God, Kell Brooks is doing a suicide mission like Amir Khan. But just to make money.
But in Triple G's defense, Kell Brook is a more credible opponent than Amir Khan was. He's never been knocked out. He's not defeated, and he's welterweight champion of the world. So
right.
We don't know what kind of fight we're going to get. I mean,
exactly.
The guy has never been knocked out. You can't expect him to get knocked out yet. Okay?
Right.
I mean, it is the possibility because Triple G has knocked out everybody. But this
right.
is not
21 straight.
This is
yeah.
not. Amir Khan. If Amir Khan would have fought Triple G, he wouldn't have got knocked out. He would have get decapitated. We would have to be looking for his head because we wouldn't be able to find it. You understand what I'm saying?
Decapitated. Man, that's a strong word, man.
Yeah, too strong a word.
But it's true. You're right. You know,
radio, the network, letting the feelings flow. It's a Sunday, and we're about ready to go here. We'll be back probably tomorrow, the Labor Day show. Virtual broadcast on Thursday. Giants won their last preseason game to go 2-3 for the season. The Jets that same day lost their last preseason game to go 1-3. Nas, looking at the Giants, you know, it's remarkable, man. They, you know, if Eli Manning goes down, Nas, they're nuts. They have no. You know, I remember back in the day, and just so you know too, where every team had two good quarterbacks, namely Jay Pirelli. You look at the Brady with Bledsoe. I mean, you go back, there was Bart Starr and Zeke Bukowski. There were Johnny Unitas and Omo. You know, it's remarkable. They have no back. If Eli Manning goes down, they're done.
Exactly. They
have
nobody.
They are. And the problem is there's a good chance it can happen with that O-line in front of them. Jerry Reese came in and made a few good picks on the D-line and kind of made his reputation. But ever since then, Jerry Reese's picks, they've been in the trash, man. So, I mean, he hasn't provided Eli with the proper offensive line to really prosper. And the opinion on Eli has kind of went down on people, and they're really not watching football and understanding that Eli is still a good, solid, top-tier quarterback.
Absolutely.
He just has to have good players around him and a good line to really function, and a system that functions. So, I mean, him and ODB are going to put up big numbers as long as they can keep him upright.
ODB?
But Jay Reese has done the Giants a disservice, man.
Oh, dirty.
And also, they picked the Giants to win the division, being that they got two rookie quarterbacks now. You know, Bradford went to the Vikings now.
Right.
So the guy, and this guy on the Cowboys is two rookies. So they're picking the Giants now to win the division.
Well, the Cowboys got Sanchez, don't they?
Yeah, I got a question.
Cowboys got Sanchez as the backup.
They got Dak Prescott.
You can sign with the Cowboys, okay?
Right. They got Dak Prescott in there, who's a rookie they drafted in the fourth.
Right,
so
but they got,
well
got Sanchez as the backup.
Dak Prescott.
He's the second string now.
He's the backup. I said, my God.
Sanchez is remarkable. Here's a guy who left the Jets. He went to Philly. Okay, then he left Philly and went to Denver. They cut him about 3:30, and about 5:30, he was the backup quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? Man,
one of the highest paid backup quarterbacks. Can you imagine that? Highest paid backup quarterback.
Mark Sanchez, another one of those USC products who played with really good skill position, really good O-line, and looked better than what he was, man. He got to the league, and the truth came out.
Absolutely.
That's just what it is.
You know what? You hit it on the point because when he started losing a little bit back there with the Jets, on the line and in the back, the deterioration showed that he wasn't as good as he was perpetrated to be. I mean, people, he lived off the fact that he took the Jets twice to one game from the Super Bowl. He still has a record for the longest touchdown by a rookie quarterback in a championship game. But he lived off that for the longest time, and the media seemed to like him. But you're right, when they pulled the curtain back, it was a different story. Yeah.
Yeah, they took him to those AFC championship games. He didn't take them. I'll just state that.
No. Listen. Yeah. He was along for the ride. And you know what? Not only that, he wasn't the driver of the bus either. he wasn't the driver of the bus. Bill Parcells tells that great story. He said he used to get on the bus. He said he didn't do no roll call. All he said was, "Is LT here?" They said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, we can go then. We can go." Once gentlemen, we're going to run. It's great having you back. We'll maybe do something tomorrow for Labor Day. Leave you with three thoughts. Life was persistent. The most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others, you rent your pay for your room here on earth. I am my brother's keeper, and my brother's coming all colors. The first quote, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The second one, Muhammad Ali. The first one, Roberto Clemente, dovetailed by Nelson Mandela. Gentlemen, Marvin Gaye is going to take us away. Don't anybody move. Marvin has this to say.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time when the world won't be singing. When the world won't be singing. Flowers won't grow. No. Bells won't be ringing. No bells won't be ringing. Who really cares? Who really cares? Who's willing to try? Who is willing to try? To save a world. To save a world. That's destined to die. That is destined to die. When I look at the world. When I look at the world. It fills me with sorrow. It fills me with sorrow. Little children today. Children today. Really gonna suffer tomorrow. Really suffer tomorrow. Oh, what a shame. What a shame. Such a bad way to
live. Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop living.
When we can't stop living.
Live.
Live.
Live for life. Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
You see, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
Save the babies. Save the babies. And if you want to live, you got love.
with that, we're going to go end the show. Thank the Muscle Man for getting back. Even with Muscle Smith, over there, and back. And Nas. Gentlemen, we'll probably maybe do Labor Day show tomorrow. Now, I'll be one more time. Life on the system, let's be like this. Then you go to Dr. Martin Luther King, the youngest man to win the Nobel Peace Prize. Serving to others, Richard Pitt, the only other, the first three-time heavyweight champion of the world, I'm Ali. And my brother, Steve, the Roto Committee, greatest right fielder ever with your baseball. My brothers come in all colors. Nelson Mandela. Gentlemen, I'm glad to have you. First lady of the G. Hello, so good to have you. Rosie! So good to have you by the baseball. The cousin, his daughter, Gentlemen, love you, my brothers. We'll talk tomorrow. We'll do a special show. Larry Hardesty, coming in now. We got to go, Larry. Grandfather, GD. Come on, Larry.
Hi, I'm Larry Hardesty from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. Did you enjoy the show? It was outstanding. But I expect that from the legendary Doc Stanley. Nothing less than the best. As he always says to me, and it's my favorite saying from him, live your life today as if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Words to live by. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great night, and we'll see you next time on Sports In Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley.